Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Hello and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH and 96.5 TIC. As we've been doing the last few months on Face Connecticut, we're getting updates with a number of candidates running for various offices across Connecticut. And it's time we check in again with Republican for Governor Ryan Fazio. Ryan, good to have you in studio.
Thanks for having me back, Morgan.
Let's talk about a number of issues, because last time I saw you, it was right before the convention, and now you're running unopposed in what was kind of a surprise and a very interesting situation that unfolded a few weeks ago on the Republican side. But now that that's out of the way, let's talk about some of the issues. And the one that is coming up the most, and the one that's getting the most attention across Connecticut, is electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Electric rates, electric rate increase requests, and so much more. What do you have proposed to reduce Connecticut residents' electric bills across the state?
Well, first of all, Connecticut residents should know that the pain they're feeling is real and it's backed up by all the evidence. Connecticut has the second highest electric bills in the entire country, but it doesn't have to be that way. The reason we have such high electric bills and much higher electric bills than we need to have is because there are at least $1 billion of hidden taxes embedded in our electric bills, from public benefits to hidden taxes in the supply charge of our bill that do not deliver electricity to our homes and are discretionary in nature, passed by the governor and state legislature over many years. And this governor has made it worse. He's raised those hidden taxes by hundreds of millions of dollars more. I'm running for governor to eliminate those hidden taxes, reduce electric bills by about 20%. So cut the RGGI, cut the RPS tax. Those are in the supply charges of the bill. And eliminate the public benefits charge for good. We can do that. There is no reason we should have the second highest electric bills after only Hawaii, which is an island. And we can change that. And that will be a top priority for me as governor.
You served in the state Senate, Ryan, and while you were there, you got obviously a behind-the-scenes look at how the sausage is made, if you will. And one thing that was interesting to me, there were a few different plans on energy that the majority Democrats had proposed. For instance, there was the idea of the energy rebate. That was the governor's idea. The Democrats seemed to be on board with it, at least initially. When the war in Iran started, which no one saw coming at the beginning of the legislative session, the idea of a gas tax holiday had come up. But at the end of the day, those initiatives did not pass. I asked the governor himself recently, and he seems to back his new idea about going after Eversource's monopoly status if he's reelected to a third term. But my question to you, Ryan, is this. Is there an appetite in the state legislature to tackle this issue? Because numerous ideas seem to be thrown around, but residents are wondering what's being done and, moreover, where there could be common ground on all these ideas.
Yeah, great question. I think you set the picture very well. It's funny that the governor says, oh, you know, if I'm reelected, I'll do this and crack down on the utilities. You've been in charge for 8 years. You know, your record is what matters, not the talk. People are tired of talk. And after 8 years, if this governor is saying, I'm going to do something about the utilities if elected to, you could do it right now. He could call a special session of the legislature and pass whatever he thinks is right now. But the fact of the matter is his record shows the exact opposite. He's given multiple sweetheart deals to the big utilities like Eversource in 2021 in a rate case settlement above objections of PURA. He allowed Eversource to sell Aquarion for hundreds of millions of dollars more than other proposals in order to get Aquarion out from underneath the regulator, which means that they can raise water utility rates at higher and higher rates. And he has rejected at every turn my proposals and the proposals of other Democrats and Republicans in the legislature to cut the public benefits charge and ultimately end the public benefits charge for good. So records matter. words don't matter. And it's hard to believe that after 8 years of raising public benefits charges, of raising other hidden taxes in our electric bill, of giving sweetheart deals to Eversource, that suddenly this governor is going to find religion and help consumers.
So in a nutshell, one of your big priorities on electric rates is to eliminate the public benefits, correct?
Yes.
And he is suggesting going after the monopoly status. But now there's a third idea that's floated around in the race for governor, mm-hmm. and that would be Josh Elliott's approach, which is to have more municipal-run electricity and energy. How do you respond to that idea?
Well, the reason that the several municipally-run utilities have lower costs in Connecticut, most famously Wallingford, is because they don't pay the public benefits charge. So forget about who runs them, look at the actual policies and component parts of those public utilities. And the difference is that they don't pay a public benefits charge, and also they don't pay a property tax. So those towns that have municipal utilities are paying higher property taxes in change as well. Listen, I think that if certain municipalities want to have the option to buy out the utilities, you know, we should support local control and that potentiality. But it's not feasible to expect 169 municipalities or 160 municipalities to all spend, you know, billions of dollars combined to buy out a private company, as I think Josh is basically proposing. Most of those municipal utilities were founded over 100 years ago, around 1900. I think the last one, other than Basra, was probably founded in the 1910s or 1920s. So they've been so long standing that they operate relatively effectively. And I think asking a town or city 100 years later to buy out a private company and undertake hundreds of millions of dollars in debt and then operate a utility company is probably not feasible. And we know how to cut electric rates already. Eliminate the hidden taxes in the electric bill and find a way to bring in more affordable and reliable energy into the state.
So aside from each of the three candidates running for governor, then the Connecticut Democrats came out with a statement basically blaming President Trump for increased energy costs and tied you into that. Do you believe that Washington has an impact on what's happening in Connecticut?
Sure. Washington always is going to have impacts one way or the other. But my concern is Connecticut policy. I'm not running for Congress and would never want to be in Congress. I'm running to be the head of the state government and effectuate state policy. And the federal government is the federal government for all 50 states. But we have the second highest energy bills of any state. So we're doing something uniquely incorrectly in Connecticut state government that are driving up the costs of Connecticut ratepayer bills relative to every other state in the country. The only state with higher energy bills than Connecticut is Hawaii, which is an island, which has to tanker in all its energy. So they have an excuse. We don't. And I believe in holding our state government to a high standard. We're falling below any reasonable standard. And I think Connecticut deserves nothing but the best. And as governor, I'll deliver leadership that actually makes our state and our energy sector affordable.
I'm Morgan Cunningham, and this is Face Connecticut for those just joining us. And I'm sitting down with Republican candidate for governor, Ryan Fazio. Ryan, shifting gears from electricity to school and municipal funding, property tax is another issue that you talk a lot about. Connecticut Democrats have often promoted this particular year, putting more money into schools and putting more money into towns in the form of one-year aid in this year's budget cycle. And it's not to say that that's not welcome by different municipalities and education systems. Yet there are still locations, Hebron and Colchester among them, also Hartford, that have shortfalls, or municipalities that have tried two, three, or four times to pass their budgets, but they failed for a while and things had to be cut and adjusted. So even though there was aid, there's this idea that something is broken. How do you address this?
Something is broken, and property taxes are out of control in this state. According to the Tax Foundation, Connecticut has the third highest property taxes in the country. And for many people in many towns and cities, property taxes are like a second mortgage. People in modest homes having to pay over $10,000 a year to the government, you don't build equity from your property taxes. You know, my first selectman's fond of saying you can pay off your mortgage, but you can't pay off your property taxes. And it doesn't have to be this way. This is not right. But the state government deserves responsibility for this. It's when every town and city sees property taxes not only way too high, but increasing at a breakneck speed. It isn't the fault of every single one of those towns and cities. It's actually the fault of the state government, which keeps imposing costs and policies on our towns and cities that's driven up the cost of property taxes to the point that they're the third highest in the entire country. Remember, 8 years ago, I'm old enough to remember, 8 years ago, this governor ran for office promising to deliver property tax relief, $700 of property tax relief. Fast forward two terms. None of that has been delivered. Instead, we see property taxes going up 5, 6, 7% year after year for our residents, especially working class families and seniors who cannot afford any more. I'm running for governor to provide solutions. I've proposed a property tax cap and property tax relief. In order to accomplish that, what we'll do is eliminate hundreds of the 1,400 unfunded mandates that the state imposes on our towns and cities, which is responsible for driving up the cost of property taxes. Ensure that funding increases with cost and is predictable into the future so towns can budget. Reform the tax exemptions for large, quote-unquote, nonprofit universities and hospitals, which aren't paying their fair share, and ultimately cap property taxes into the future so they cannot increase more than 2% or the rate of inflation. We can get this done, and we need to get this done.
One question that I asked you at WTIC's 11th Commandment Republican gubernatorial debate, see, I got it down still. One of the questions that night for both you and then your opponent, Betsy McCoy, was, do you, as a Republican, if you were elected as governor, have enough connections in the legislature to get majority Democrats in the House and Senate, because that's likely not going to change even if a Republican's elected as governor? Do you have the ability to work across the aisle to either get reform on electric rates done or your property tax cap and cut done?
Yes.
How does that work?
Absolutely. I have great relationships in the legislature, and in my 5.5 years in the state Senate, I was able to co-author and pass 7 different laws that slightly, moderately improve the efficiency of government and reduce costs. Everything from stronger oversight of the utilities, more transparency with regard to our utility bill, giving towns and cities more choice in how they do planning and zoning in their town charters, giving women better access to birth control, and also opening up more pathways to employment for workers without a college degree. I've a proven record of working across the aisle effectively to reduce the cost of government. And that's part of the reason I chose to run for governor, because I know I can get the job done. I know I can bring people together and work across the aisle, because I think there are a lot of good Democratic legislators who care about this state, who actually want to see more assertive leadership in tackling the problems that their constituents face. I'll work with anybody and everybody to get the job done.
On the issue of education specifically, the education cost-sharing formula, which the base has not been updated since 2013, and that has been a problem that Democrats have been wanting to address for some time. And in fact, this legislative session, you may remember some of your colleagues had proposed increasing it over the course of a number of years, and the governor ended up not supporting that plan, but instead wanted a commission, a group, to study the issue and come up with recommendations for him, again, if he's reelected to a third term, to address. So the issue of the education cost-sharing formula, is it as simple as giving it the boost, the first boost since 2013, on a permanent, ongoing basis and not with increments made or additions made for a specific budget year or cycle? Or is there something greater that needs to be changed? Do you need to get rid of it and restart from scratch? What needs to happen with that?
Listen, I think the funding should be predictable so that municipalities can budget, and it should increase roughly with costs. So if there's a rate of inflation and so on, and it should be fair across towns and cities. It should be, there should be a foundation amount that I have a bias that if things should be increased, it should probably be the foundation amount. So it's across the board. for all students to count on. And then obviously towns or cities that have more poverty should get higher funding. I don't think it's a very difficult problem to find the right answer to. You know, the idea that after 8 years in office, the governor needs another commission that'll probably disregard in the end is kind of laughable. I don't think that these problems are so intractable, most of them, that you need to study them. If you're doing the job of governor full time, you should probably have at least some of the answers. I think this is one that there's only several different levers. So trying to find the room in the budget and trying to give towns and cities predictability will go a long way. But that's one component of, I think, four or five in ultimately giving towns and cities enough relief to stop raising property taxes and hopefully ultimately decreasing them. I know that my plan for a property tax cap and property tax reform will get that job done.
I'm Morgan Cunningham. It's Face Connecticut. If you're just joining us, Republican candidate Ryan Fazio for governor is with us on WTIC. Let's talk a little bit about Connecticut and its relation to some federal issues. And one of them that got a lot of attention this year and with the second Trump administration is the so-called Connecticut ICE bill, dealing with immigration agents and how they're interacting in Connecticut, which is now subject to a DOJ lawsuit. And when I've asked Democrats about the issue, they back it, they support it, they like the idea of it, they believe that it's legal, and they believe that it will stand up in court, or at least they're willing to see where it goes in court. Where do you stand on that particular law?
I voted against that law, and first of all, it's clearly unconstitutional. But more importantly, it actively tries to protect people who are not only in our country and our state illegally, but who have committed crimes. It bars state and local law enforcement from arresting or detaining or transferring people who are not only in the country illegally, but who have also committed serious crimes and been convicted of those crimes in our state or in our country from being transferred to federal authorities for deportation. I think the vast majority of Connecticut residents want to see legal immigrants come to Connecticut and succeed in Connecticut like everybody else and contribute to our society, pay taxes, and so on. But the vast majority of people also understand that if you came to this state or country illegally and you've also committed serious crimes, that you shouldn't be protected from being detained or deported. And that is a public safety issue and a common sense issue. This governor has passed now two laws, signed two laws in office, two versions of the Trust Act, which ban state and local law enforcement from arresting or detaining and transferring to federal authorities a person who is in the country and state illegally who has been convicted of Class C, D, or E felonies, like manslaughter. I mean, these are serious, violent, dangerous crimes, including taking the life of another person that Connecticut citizens should be very concerned about. And as governor, I'll find the common sense approach that protects the public safety. Unfortunately, this governor and this state legislature have failed to do that and have picked politics and ideology over common sense.
Very recently, Connecticut did not attend the big state fair, the Great State Fair in Washington, D.C. The governor's office cited the cost. Also politics, that was another factor. A group of defectors, Republicans, did actually go down, and that included one of our hosts here at WTIC. Should Connecticut have gone, in your opinion?
Yes, absolutely. Listen, the best way to keep politics out of it is to have people of all parties from all states attend in celebration of our country's 250th birthday. We're so lucky as Americans, and we should be coming together on this occasion of our 250th birthday as a country to celebrate all that is good about this country and use it as a moment to find unity. And unfortunately, this governor and state government decided to add more politics than was necessary to this conversation. I was very disappointed that this governor didn't send any sort of representation for Connecticut to Washington, D.C. This state has a lot to be proud of. This state was crucial to our independence. It was crucial to us winning the Civil War and World War II and becoming such a great country. And we should have contributed to the celebrations in Washington. I think that us boycotting it, so to speak, this governor added more politics to the conversation than needed to be.
So if there's a group in Connecticut that's not happy with what's going on in Washington, they're not happy with the politics, they're not happy with the president, right? What to you is the right balance between managing what's going on in our state and the sentiments of a group of people, and also what is going on in Washington, and making sure that Connecticut's not passed by when it comes to transportation funding and getting along with Washington to a degree so that Connecticut does benefit? What to you is the fine line?
Well, listen, sometimes it's going to be difficult to make distinctions, but other times I think distinctions are vital. Listen, there are state issues that we need to concentrate on and that need to be solved, and we need to work across the aisle and across different backgrounds in order to solve them. There are issues in Washington where there are going to be disagreements, and people should voice their concerns. And ultimately, decisions are made at the ballot box every 2 years. You can vote for Congress. You can vote for U.S. Senator. And those are separate elections than your votes for mayor or Board of Education or state legislator or governor. And we need to make those distinctions because we need our federal government to work to do its job on war and peace, border security, and so on. And we need our state government to do its job on public safety and public schooling and taxes and economic growth. And most of all, we should be able to come together on the things that matter to us as Americans and Connecticut residents that we all can agree on, like love of country and celebration of 250 years of greatness for this great country. So let's try to make the distinctions. Let's recognize that all of us, you know, have common humanity and that we need to do the work to bring people together across the state and across this country.
Let's talk a little bit about your campaign. In your case, you're not facing any kind of opposition for November 3rd, so you're sailing into the election. That's what's on your mind, correct?
Yes. November's always been the goal.
And what are you thinking about with this Democrat situation? You've got the incumbent, Ned Lamont, seeking a third term. He's facing a primary from within his own party, the progressive side of the party, against Josh Elliott, a state representative and a colleague of yours from the state capitol. What's your read on your opposition?
Well, you know, listen, I think it signals weakness of a sitting incumbent Democratic governor in a state that has many more registered Democrats and Republicans to receive such a formidable primary challenge 8 years into his time in office. It shows that even Democratic voters understand that this governor after 8 years has not gotten the job done. And if you listen to Josh's commercials and his campaign literature, it's about the fact that working class families have been left behind, that this state has only become more unaffordable under 8 years of the Lamont administration, and that people are hungry for change. I think our campaign in November is going to bring in so many unaffiliated voters and moderate Democrats, and especially working class Democrats, who are upset with the status quo, who have given this governor 8 years to make the state more affordable and have been failed. And I think you are what your record says you are, as Bill Parcells said. And ultimately, people are feeling the pain after 8 years of one party rule and this governor's administration, and they're looking for something new and something better because they understand Connecticut deserves better. So this primary being so competitive, even for an 8 year sitting governor, is symptomatic of the failures of the Lamont administration.
Brian, I appreciate your stopping by. Keep in touch.
Thank you, Morgan.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.